All right, I'm gonna call the meeting to order today. So this is the faculty senate meeting for Wednesday, January 26, 2022. So Pat, do we have a verification of quorum?
We do have quorum, and thanks everybody for your patience, and our special thanks to our IT guy, Tony, for helping us out. We're having a connection problem, but he went to Plan B, and we appreciate that. I also want to remind you to fill out the attendance sheet at your place and then just leave it there. We'll collect it after the meeting. And my plea that you haven't heard for a couple months now, remember that the meeting is being recorded, and even though we might be able to hear you in this room, if you don't use a microphone, it won't be on our recording. So if you want to make a motion or a comment or ask a question, please just go to one of the microphones either up front or at the sides there, and we appreciate that. Thanks.
All right. Whoa, now it's louder. All right. So we'll move on to the adoption of the agenda. So can I have someone make a motion in a second to adopt the agenda for today? Second? Valentiner. All right. Okay. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right, the agenda is adopted. So second, we'll move on to approval of the November 27th, 2021 minutes. Again, can I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes from the November 27th meeting? Therese. All right. So all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right, approval of the minutes. So we'll move on to public comment. Pat, do we have any public comment for today?
No public comment today.
Okay, we'll move on to the Faculty Senate President's announcements. Basically, I just want to say welcome back to the spring semester, and thank you for all coming out. Like I said, and I wish it was a little warmer outside, but like I said, hopefully it's going to warm up in the next few days. So we'll move on to items for Faculty Senate to consider. So today we have a guest speaker, Bill Hodson. He's the Senior Associate Vice President of Human Resource Services. I asked him to come speak. I'll give you the exact reason why. I was here for 7 years, and in the last 6 years, I don't know who was in charge of HR. I mean, I really had no idea. And so I kind of figured, I've asked some other people who didn't either. So I wanted to have Bill come speak, so if everyone in here can get to know him. So he's gonna talk a little bit about his background, how he ended up coming to NIU, and then he'll take some question and answer time if you wanna ask him questions that are related to the Human Resource Services. So please welcome Bill Hodson.
Thank you so much for the invitation today. I appreciate it. What a great turnout. Peter said I could walk over here, but he probably wasn't examining the weather. I didn't walk over, just so you don't worry about that. Very good. Let me adjust this. Well, it's been great to be here. It's coming up on, you mind if I take this off? I'm not within 6 feet. Been here for almost 6 months now, and it's been a real privilege and joy to be here. I've learned an awful lot about the organization. There's some amazing things about the organization and about HR. There's also some things that I think I could help with too. So we'll talk about both the opportunities and some of the struggles and things like that, some of the things that are ahead. Now, Peter did ask that I give some of my background. He said, I've got an hour and a half to talk. Did you say that right? Hour and a half, is that, may not be enough.
Okay. Maybe that.
Well, I'll give you a little bit about my background. People know that, many people that know me say, well, this weather is nothing for you. You've come from Minnesota. And I said, Yeah, but I had to get used to Minnesota because I'm a native Californian. So born and raised in Southern California, met my wife in high school. We just celebrated our 39th anniversary just last week. She's in Minnesota working at Mayo Clinic where I came from, and we see each other every couple weeks, but she'll eventually move down here. So we raised our two boys in California. They were born in California. They were raised in Indiana. But both of them married wives that said, I'm not going to live in the snow. So they both moved to warmer weather. One's in Texas with a couple grandkids of ours, as well as the older one who's back in Los Angeles, just a few miles from where I grew up. So our kids have chosen warmer weather. But both my wife and I love the Midwest and see us being here for many, many years. My educational background went to Cal State Northridge in Southern California. Really enjoyed that. A school, a little bit larger enrollment to this organization, but very similar in terms of our diversity and our focus. So if you're familiar with the Cal State system, again, very, very large system, but Cal State Northridge, very similar to this. A suburb, you know, about 40, 50 miles from Los Angeles, very similar demographics. So great to be there. My experience has been in HR. It's probably hard to imagine somebody being in HR for 41 years now, but I've loved every minute of it. And I've had a chance to work in both the public and the nonprofit and the private sectors. I've worked for high-tech firms, for government research centers. My very first job out of college, and I'll have to date myself, this is going back to 1980, was working for a division of the RAND Corporation. Anybody familiar with RAND? And so I worked for the System Development Division, and we were designing back at that time some of the first computers, and they were as big as this room and probably did about what our iPhones do, really, to be honest. One of the interesting things that I got to do working there in HR is we were always on the cutting edge, even back then in the 1980s, is we were developing a voice recognition system using, and this dates myself, so you can raise your hand if you know what I'm talking about. We used a DEC PDP 11780 using Pascal. There's a few of you. Okay, perfect. To be able to understand voice recognition, and what we were doing is we were producing an employment application. Isn't that amazing? So that was great. That was a great beginning for me. So several years at that organization, again, working for defense electronic companies, private companies, manufacturers, others. Came back to the Midwest because my wife's family's here. Landed in Bloomington, Indiana, where Indiana University is, and worked there for a number of years. Had an opportunity to complete my graduate degree in what we call O'Neill, the O'Neill School of Public and Environmental Affairs, or we call it SPIA. So very similar program to our MPA program that we have here on campus. And talking to Kurt and others from that group, a lot of connectivity between the two schools. So I'm a grad from IU. So to come here, I just had to put the N in front of it. The colors are almost the same, you know, very similar. And sometimes they're better in basketball, but they're probably never better than in football. So, you know, I'll just say that. So after leaving Indiana University, I went to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. That's where I really got used to weather like this, because the recruiter for Mayo Clinic said, you know, the weather here is about the same as Southern Indiana. They were quite wrong. You know, it's very different. So the temperatures up there today are probably about 10 degrees colder. I think Rochester, Minnesota was even on the news this morning, but hopefully we won't be here in the next week. But a great opportunity to work for such a large organization, 70,000 employees, really probably one of the, well, ranked as one of the best hospitals in the world. And I really had a chance to work in a number of different areas for the organization to expand. So they're doing very well. But I will say that they're fielding some real issues. One thing that they did recently, for good reason, but you may be on different sides of the fence. Again, most everybody here is wearing a mask except me. But Mayo Clinic made it a mandate where you had to be vaccinated to work there. And so 700 employees were terminated just a couple weeks ago because of that. So we're not doing that here yet, right? We're good. So, but I just wanted to share, you know, coming from very large, very sophisticated organizations and hoping to bring my skills and put them to good use here. And again, I love being in academia working for such a large hospital system was amazing, but a pretty big organization with 70,000. So this is just the right size for me. And I appreciate the invitation to be here. Let me talk a little bit about some of the things that I've done and why I came here. My goal is to hopefully help an organization grow and thrive, and that of course involves the people. I'm not necessarily one that's going to bring in ideas that are foreign to the organization, but to work with what we have to say, how can we make this a better place, a place where the culture is positive, that people want to get up in the morning and come to work, no matter what your job is, people that feel valued and appreciated, and individuals that really want to contribute to the mission. Working for both nonprofits and for-profits, being a mission-driven organization, you know, having a purpose to what we do, something that's greater than just the job we do, but to see where our job is connected to the greater whole is really important. And I found that over the years. It's not about, for me, it's not about money, and it's not about fame and fortune and things like that. It's like, are we really making a difference? And you would see that in probably, you know, anybody that comes from a nonprofit organization. Coming to HR and asking lots and lots of questions of my staff and others, and it's a great staff, they work really hard, but we have lots of struggles, so I don't want to hide that fact. Many of those of you that are waiting for classifications to be analyzed as part of a desk audit, or waiting for a position to be filled, or not getting a response, I apologize on that. We're really, really understaffed in a number of areas, and we're really slow, we're really stuck. And so I welcome your ideas, concerns, or thoughts. Feel free to reach out to me outside of this and say, Bill, I'm really having a problem. And I've extended that certainly to our senior roundtable and other leaders. So I want to be in touch with that. And then for the last several months, our provost in the back knows this, and maybe my work has been kind of so-so. I wanted to work in the role of an employment coordinator to really understand some of the struggles that our department's going through, and they assigned me to the provost office. So she hasn't kicked me out yet, but, you know, she has reason to. My work's been pretty so-so. So we have a lot of good intention in HR, but we have some very complicated systems. We have some complicated policies. And my goal is to help streamline a lot of that, to make this a more efficient and effective HR department. So I certainly welcome your input where you felt either that you've been wronged or mistreated or negatively impacted by a particular policy or procedure. One of my goals this year is to review all HR policies. And I woke up one morning and I took a look at the policy, and I really appreciate the policy library, and I saw that my name was on all these 100 policies, even that dated back dozens of years before I ever came. And I thought, uh-oh, if my name's associated with this, I really need to make sure that this is a fair and equitable policy and procedure. But if any of you have concerns or issues or feel like, you know, we need to take a look at that, feel free to reach out and let me know. So I want to hear your input. So we've got our struggles in HR, and I appreciate your support and your patience as we get through that. We are hiring people. We are backfilling positions. We're exploring a number of different avenues to distribute the work so we can be more effective and really be more of a partner on campus. We have some systems, some that are old and some that are new, but maybe not formatted real well. But for example, for those of you that are involved with graduate students and so forth, that's still an appointment process that's not well automated. And so our goal by the end of the summer is to automate that using People Admin. But if you're aware of other idiosyncrasies with our systems, feel free to share that with me. So if I were to put together some of my goals, I'll just use a few words to describe that. These are all goals that I hope to achieve this year. But one is to make sure that our organization is accessible. And that's not only with hours to our office building, which is obviously way out to the west end of the campus, but to be accessible and to be available. I've heard it time and time again. Oftentimes when an issue gets advanced to my level, they're like, Bill, I've been trying to reach your staff and I can't get a response. Sometimes people can't get a response from me that quickly, but feel free to reach out to me if that's not happening. But that's a goal for my staff, to be available and accessible. We also need to be effective and we need to be efficient. There's an awful lot of processes that I alluded to a moment ago that are in place, maybe because of our interpretation of the civil service system or interpretation of Illinois rules or regulations that may be not necessary. And those are things that I'm examining. And again, I welcome your input if you're aware of specifics. One of the things that I'm concerned about, and I don't have specific examples, I hope you don't either, but I want to make sure that HR is a professional and personable experience. And I'm hearing some positives, but I hear some negatives, where in difficult situations, our staff hasn't always been kind and supportive. Many times they have. But if you're aware of situations where you've not been treated professionally and personably, if we're the people side of the school and we're the facing, we're employee and applicant facing, we really need to be both professional and personable. So again, let me know if you're aware of other things that have happened. One thing that I want to do, and this was even part of my interview process, was to identify how HR becomes a strategic partner to the campus. And that feels like so long ago, because there's been an awful lot of things where we're putting out fires and we're reacting and responding, and it's difficult to be strategic. But my goal, even this year, is to work with folks on a strategic basis to say, let's apply some critical thinking. What's the best way to solve this problem? How do we address this concern and do it in a proactive and effective way, so we aren't continually reacting and responding, and the good of people is really recognized. So that's something. Being a strategic partner is awfully important. So again, some of the things that I hope to accomplish this year, I'll just go through a short list and then we'll have time for questions. I promise I won't do the whole hour and a half after all. So is again to review all of our HRIS policies to make sure that they've aligned with mission, vision, and values. And there's been some policies that have been brought to my attention, you know, specific things. I think one policy very specifically, and maybe it doesn't affect you or maybe it does, and this would be one for basically tuition waivers, that we had set kind of an artificial number of the reimbursement being only 124 credit hours per four-year term. And it's like, well, where did that come from? That's not in the state legislature. It's not in our any of our other guidelines. It was just something that was set. And it was harming individuals if they were part of a Bachelor of Science degree, if they were at a university where there was a different credit guideline for that. So we changed that pretty quickly. So again, please bring to my attention as I review these policies over the next year and say, yep, this is an issue, or this has affected me negatively. And maybe there's a reason for that, but please bring it to my attention. One of the most important things I want to suggest, and I've shared this with Senior Roundtable, and I can't give you specifics because we haven't laid it out yet, but I want to establish what we would call a compensation philosophy. With so many employees and faculty and staff, even student workers at times, there's been concerns or issues around salary. We certainly have a reputation of not necessarily being the highest paid organization and not the highest paid in the state. And so I want to set some goals for us as to where do we want to be compensation wise? How do we want to base our compensation? What's the link and the tie and the basis for that? So again, feel free to reach out to me if you have specific thoughts. I bet every one of you will have an idea and that would be okay. But over the next several weeks, be working with Senior Roundtable to establish a philosophy that we can use to follow. One of the things that we're working right now to do is improving both our recruitment and our retention efforts. There certainly has been some sentiment across campus that we are seeing right now significant turnover that doesn't really play out in all the numbers. Our turnover now has been about 10 or 11% to date. In the last year, we've had years where our turnover has been more like 14, 15%. As I've shared with other groups, our turnover feels higher because we're down probably about 700 positions over the last 10 years. And so that makes it tougher. And then to be totally honest and transparent, that number of being down 700 positions feels bad, but it probably is the right thing to do just because our enrollment is down significantly as well. So we can talk more about that separately, but have we changed the way that we work? Have we changed the systems that we use? And probably not significantly. So losing the people that we do and having the vacancies that we have using the same processes and procedures and systems make it extra tough. And so we really feel a loss of turnover. So 10% is a high number for higher ed. Of course, that's probably good for some businesses, but it's probably too high for us. When we talk about retention, my goal is in the next year, and I might be able to use help from people in this room, is I'd like to start doing what we call stay interviews. Has anybody heard of that before? It's a couple heads nodding. So a stay interview is basically having a conversation with somebody, and it would be established questions, and you would identify certainly who you are, and you would be, you know, as part of a committee or a group that's doing this. And you would gather information very much limited to the questions that you're asking. You wouldn't get into a lot of personal, but it's essentially to help us find out in HR and leadership to find out what's keeping people here. And it could be very blunt, like, well, I need the benefits, or I need the pay, or I need this, or I live in DeKalb, my family's. It could be a number of different reasons, but it would be great if we really understood that. Or if we, you know, end up having a conversation with somebody, and again, this is nobody that's expressed the desire to leave, it's just any one of us here. And you might find out that, yeah, this person's really struggling and they're about ready to start looking for another job. So is there a way we can not be reactive, but be proactive with faculty and staff here? So that may be a program that I can implement this year called stay interviews, and it doesn't have to be done by an HR individual. So if you have, but you would, of course, be having to maintain confidentiality should you conduct something like that. And again, I see it across the board. So that would be one way to help educate. Another tool that I want to use, and I've shared this with senior leadership, is that we have done a good job at assessing our climate here. Many of the different constituencies have done climate surveys that have gathered information from you and others that have been very helpful. But one thing that I want to introduce that I don't think we've ever done here, we did this at Indiana University, and that's what's called an engagement survey. And it's usually shorter and very specific about how you feel about your job. And certainly if we've done research before, we know that what's most important is the work that you do. There could be lots of things that cause you to leave or be dissatisfied, pay and supervisor and things like that. But I really want to gather more data about understanding why people love it here or they struggle here. And an engagement survey will help us understand that. Is anybody familiar with looking at, say, Gallup or other organizations' engagement survey data? Has that been something you've looked at? Okay. I'm likely going to partner with our College of Business to help us work through these things. One thing that I've heard again and again has been the need for supervisor training and support. I think our supervisors are hungry for it, and we're going to be starting. We actually started this month, but we'll have a monthly basis where our supervisors are invited to a forum, and we'll use not only topical things. We, of course, talked about COVID, and we talked about remote work, but we'll be talking a little bit about things that we're going to help that supervisor feel empowered and have the resources and the tool to be either you or a good supervisor of you. So it certainly will be open to anybody that supervises staff. One of the things too that I want to understand, we've seen this in HR, so if it's happening in HR, I fear it could be happening otherwise, and that's that there's individuals that are in civil service, and that may not reflect too many of you here, but in civil service where we really don't know what, or they don't know what their career path is, or they're in a position that's somewhat limiting, and that's happened even in HR, where we've hired a person, put them into a job and realize, you're stuck. You can't apply for that assistant manager or manager or such and such. And I thought, well, why did we do that? So I want to have a better understanding of how to work with the civil service system so that we can see some career progression. That's really what hopefully keeps a person excited, and it gives you the desire to advance your career through additional education and support and training, where you can see a path forward. And we've got some jobs, and I don't want to use the word dead end, but they've been written as singular positions, and it doesn't always give you the ability to apply for what we would perceive as higher level positions. So that's something to expand. So again, looking at personal and professional development and career pathways. Another tool that I want to use, I don't think we've done this much here, but I want to explore ways that we can do a better job at employee recognition and reward. And that could take the form of monetary, it could take the form of other forms of recognition. We have to look to see how our budget looks for the year. But those are things that I'm not aware that we do extensively. We certainly have service awards, and those are excellent to have, and I'm not taking anything away from that. But in terms of recognition and reward that might be more performance driven, I think was really would be something that we could benefit from. And I think everybody would appreciate. So those are just a few of my thoughts. I'm ending way early, as you can tell, but want to open it up for any questions or thoughts, and look for the exit if I need to run, you know, if the questions get too tough.
Anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Evgeny Nestor of Chemistry. Thank you for stopping by here and actually giving us a pretty good and deep sort of explanation what the plans are. I am sort of, my question is about graduate students. You know, that's really an issue which is very dear to many faculty, and it's a significant part of the university. So graduate students typically don't get good benefits, particularly health insurance. And I think they may get something for themselves, but they don't get anything for their family, like spouse, children. And this is dramatically impacts our ability to recruit graduate students, because obviously when they look around and see what we offer compared to other places offer, they see that we don't offer too much with respect to the benefits. So is that, there is any plans to look at this issue and see if things can be improved?
You bring up a very good point, and thanks for sharing that. So if you've heard his question, it really has to do with what are we going to do to recruit and retain graduate students, and a lot of that may have to do with benefits. You know, the graduate student obviously isn't always the individual that just extends on after the bachelor's degree. They've maybe established a family or certainly have others involved in their life. And what do we do in regards to benefits? All I can mention is that was the topic that we addressed at Indiana University, because many, many of our other Big Ten institutions in the East Coast schools, we were seeing that graduate students were organizing and a representation specifically for benefits. And sometimes it was just for dental insurance or just for medical insurance, things like that. So it's certainly a huge topic. I'm not familiar enough with the rules within the state system. As you know, all of our health insurance goes directly through the state of Illinois. That's an excellent question I hadn't pursued yet here. So unlike other organizations, Indiana University and so forth, we could choose as an institution to say, yes, we will provide this and we will cost that out. It's a very interesting relationship we have with the state of Illinois to say, you know, you're an employee, you meet this threshold, you get the benefits. We don't have a lot of control in that sense. But I want to explore that. So that's a very good question. So I'll find out where we can explore this. Even check with some of our sister universities, ISU and U of I. I'm sure this has come up repeatedly for them. It's worth exploring and to see what could we do to understand if they could be part of that. It could be as simple as X number of hours must be worked, but we'll see. We have taken, you bring up a good point about those sorts of things. We have taken the stance to partner with some of our other universities to push the system, not specifically SERS or others, but the state civil service system to expand coverage for recruitment of individuals from outside the state. Again, not specifically graduate students, but that's worth us looking into. So thanks for bringing that up, and I will take a look at that. Good questions. Sure, in the back.
Hi, thank you for your talk. My name is Jae Hee Jung in Public Administration. So you mentioned some tools like employee engagement survey in Indiana University to identify some issues and some things struggling. So how do you use the result if you use such tools to make sure employees' attitude and perceptions can be reflected?
Exactly. Okay. So, and if I understand your question, or if you heard that, it was when we conduct a, use a tool such as a survey, how are we going to take action on it? And you're 100% correct. If we were to gather information and sit on it and say, well, that's nice, there's no reason for an employee to take that survey again. It's really critical that we take action. And so whatever tool we use, whether we develop it ourselves here at NIU, or we buy one off the shelf from another organization, there will always be an action plan. And one of the actions oftentimes is to look towards the department or the work unit and say, our survey results from your work unit, and of course, every individual's survey results would be blinded or not copied. No one could look at the survey and say, Sally completed the survey and she said bad things about her supervisor or related. There would be no way to do that. But we could identify areas where people are feeling engaged, and from the questions, we would be able to determine what is the supervisor's or the department chair's role in improving that engagement. And so we would learn a lot about that, and we would identify areas that are doing well and not doing well. And a lot of times it goes down to a supervisor or department chair that could make a difference. So it's not necessarily to put that person on the spot, but to provide the tools that they need. At other organizations, both Indiana University and Mayo Clinic, we met directly with the departments. So it was a cascading effect where we could say an entire division had very positive results, but maybe there were some particular departments that were targeted with concerns or issues. And we could target those specific departments and say, here's where we need to apply our help in improving things. And many times, I'm not generalizing, I don't mean to generalize, it would come to be specifics about, you know, how do we improve recognition for the employees? Is that where the issue is? Or is it a pay issue? Or is it a respect issue from the supervisor? So there could be a number of different issues, and it may be different from department to department. But we would only conduct a survey if we know that we can have an action plan to follow through. And many of that would be very public. You know, we would share that with the university so we could see that here's some strengths and maybe here's some weaknesses. We wouldn't identify individuals, but you would be able to say, wow, only 35% of the university employees are considered engaged, which means the remaining 60 some odd percent are ready to walk out, and we would need to understand what the risks are. So an engagement tool like that also talks about the risks that if we don't make appropriate change. So good question. Did I answer your question? Okay, very good. Other questions or thoughts?
All right. Well, if there's no more questions, I would just say thank you, Bill, for coming out today. I really appreciate it. So, Bill Hodson.
Thank you very much.
All right, so we'll move along. So we're going to move to item B under items for Faculty Senate to consider. So on page 7 of your packet, there is the description of the Bob Lane Faculty Advocacy Award, and this is a call for nominations. So if you would like to nominate someone, you would submit written letters of nomination to the Faculty Senate President, which is me, no later than Wednesday, February 16th. So if you have someone, send me an email with their nomination. All right. So now we'll move on to the consent agenda. So we're going to approve the appointments of Therese Alvarado for the College of Law and Linda Saborio, Department of World Languages and Cultures, to serve on the NIU Ombudsperson Search Committee, which is going to be underway in the next few months. So can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda and a second, please? Second. All right. So we'll do a voice vote for this. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right, and the consent agenda has passed. So we don't have any unfinished business. Move to the second page, and we are going to be on new business. So the new business is we are going to have the proposed amendment to the Faculty Senate bylaws for the Article 2, Officers of the Faculty Senate, Article 8, Personal Review Responsibilities, Article 14, Faculty and SPS Personal Advisor, which is on pages 8 through 12. So this is a new first reading. So just to let you know, as you might remember, we brought this for a second reading of the proposed amendment changes to the Faculty Senate bylaws regarding the roles of the Faculty Personnel Advisor in November to Faculty Senate, and the motion failed. So this was what we were looking at was changes of the roles and responsibilities due to the separation of the Faculty Senate Personnel Advisor. So a little history. The Faculty Senate Personnel Advisor used to represent all employees of NIU, and roughly about 2017, they did a pilot study and proposed that there should be a Faculty Personnel Advisor for Faculty Senate, SPS, so Support Professional Staff, and Operative Staff. And so the OS and SPS FAC Personnel Advisor proposal was completed in spring of 2021, and it was passed at the October 6th University Council meeting. The concern that we addressed with the November Faculty Senate meeting was in the opening statement of Article 14, and it was regarding the services of the Faculty Senate Personnel Advisor and who was available for the representation. So subsequently, we went and we worked with Dr. Kerry Ferris, who is the United Faculty Alliance president representing NIU. And she suggested revised language, which has now been incorporated into the opening paragraph of Article 14. Those are the changes that we are having the first reading on. This updated proposal is now being brought forward to the Faculty Senate for a new first reading at this January 26, 2022 meeting. You can see the revised language on page 11 of your Faculty Senate packet. So with this, is there any discussion on the floor about the first reading of the new changes that we incorporate in the language?
This is David Valentine from Psychology. I just wanted to thank you, Peter, for your persistence and communicating and working with the UFA, the faculty union, to work this out. I hope that we can do similar sorts of communication and coordination in the future.
You're welcome. Thank you. Is there any other discussion? All right. With that, then we will bring this back for a second reading at the next meeting, and then we will have a vote on it. All right. So we will continue on, and we will move now to reports from councils, boards, and standing committees. So the Faculty Advisory Council to the IBHE.
Okay. All right, good afternoon, everyone. So the FAC, we had our first meeting of this calendar year on January 21st, and we're still meeting via Zoom. We're looking to invite those several guests to join us for the remainder of our meetings this year, including Eric Lichtenberger, who apparently he's our enrollment expert on the IBHE, and Senator Scott Bennett, who's the chair of the Higher Education Committee, and Deputy Governor for Education, Martin Torres, and even maybe we could get Governor Pritzker to come join us. At least we can do is send the invitation, right? Invite him to come. Okay, and for our legislative report, wow, thanks Tony, that got really loud. Jamie Ray mentioned one bill that may be of interest. It's the HB 4361, for those numbers. This bill provides for a minimum salary for adjunct faculty, or what we refer to here as the VAPS, right? a nice bill to take a look at, but it's just been proposed, so we'll have to see what happens as that moves forward. We also have met with Ginger Ostro and Janine Miner, the chief of staff at IBHE, and they gave us an update on the budget proposal from the IBHE. The IBHE is requesting a 7% increase in the higher education budget overall, with 5% being allocated based on criteria tied to the strategic plan, and a $50 million increase in MAP funding. They hope to reappropriate all capital funding, which is good. I've passed a bucket on the way up to the fourth floor of DuSable. Every time I go teach my course, I'm deciding to put some stickers on there. So it looks a little bit friendlier, right? So it would be nice to have some continued support there with capital funding. As a reminder, these budget recommendations are sent to both the governor and the General Assembly, and they are recommendations only. Does not guarantee that their proposed increases will be approved by our legislation, right? But it is nice to see that IBHE recognizes the importance and the need to support higher education. Ginger's budget presentation is available in its entirety on the IBHE website. So if you would like to take a look at that, please feel free to do so. There's a committee on equitable public university funding that was recently formed. And from what I understand, they convened for the first time back in November. They're going to be proposing a new funding formula with recommendations that are due to be launched in July 2023. So they have a whole year to figure this out, a little bit more than a year. And President Friedman serves on this, as well as our own Simone Weffer. I don't see him here, but yeah, he's not here. Okay. So I don't know if you're interested. We may want to ask him to come and update us as they move forward with the items on that committee. Okay. And finally, Pat recently posted for me a document, if you're interested. It's titled Open Letter on the Mental Health Action on Campus Act. This was a paper that was approved by all FAC members at our December meeting, and it has been shared with the IBHE members for their, it's not really approval, I just wanted to see if they're on the same board with us or not, right? Because we already did approve it. And then we plan to disperse the paper to our state legislators sometime in early February. So it's kind of a response to the Mental Health Action on Campus Act and some recommendations on how they can improve it. That's all I have for today, and our next meeting's in February. So anybody have any questions for me? Someday I'll get a question, right? It's all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. We'll move on to the advisory committee for the University Advisory Committee for the Board of Trustees. We have no report, but I was going to let you know the next Board of Trustees meeting is February 10th, and it's going to be the individual meetings, of course, from the finance, academic affairs, research, innovation, finance, and audit. And then there'll also be a BOT special meeting at that same date on February 10th. So we want to see Faculty Rights Responsibilities Committee. We have no report. Under the Rules, Governance, and Elections Committee, we do have a report from Ben.
All right. So the Faculty Senate University Council Rules, Governance, and Election Committee met on November 29th last year. And at that meeting, we discussed a new charge given to the committee to discuss the creation of a cyberbullying website, and then explore current policies to see if there's a need to update current policies or create new policies covering cyberbullying on campus or in the virtual space, obviously. We had two on-campus experts on bullying come to speak to the group to give us an update on the current evidence and research around bullying, Michelle Demaray and David Gunkel. We discussed the campus stakeholders, which may be relevant as we engage in that work. And then we established three working groups, a cyberbullying resource development working group, a working group focused on collecting data across campus about what cyberbullying looks like on campus and the prevalence, and then a review of current policies working group, where they'll look at what's on the books to determine if what we have covers cyberbullying or if it needs to be expanded or modified going forward. And our next meeting is tomorrow. I can ask if there's any questions, but I'm hoping.
Thank you, Ben. We'll move on to the Social Justice Committee. Ishmael, I saw you somewhere. There you are.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Okay, so the last time I briefed the Faculty Senate on the work of the Social Justice Committee, I reported on the five key recommendations the committee had prioritized as its main focus of attention for this academic year 2021-2022. So today I want to report that the Social Justice Committee's working groups, namely the Institutional Racism Working Group, Diversity, Equity and Inclusion, and Academic Affairs Working Group, have all began working internally and with a number of stakeholders to outline the steps, action plans, collect additional data and resources necessary to facilitate the implementation of these prioritized recommendations. A key part of this work in progress involves what we hope will remain a feature of the committee's working structure, and that is to continue to convene regular meetings with the university senior administration and leadership to leverage their support and secure their commitment to implement these recommendations. Last October, the committee convened two such meetings. The first being the first one, which included Provost Ingram and NIU Chief Diversity Officer Vernice Edgar Walden, highlighted the work of the Academic Affairs Working Group chaired by my good friend Ben Creed. This working group, as you may all know, is tasked with the implementation of two key recommendations. First, to procure the administration's commitment and support to ensure that the Social Justice Committee is adequately resourced so that the committee can carry out its charge. A formal request outlining how the administration can support this committee work had been forwarded to the provost, and she promised to get back to the committee very soon. The Academic Affairs Working Group has also been doing some serious work on the committee's hallmark recommendations aimed at creating equitable tenure and promotion policies by revising Faculty Senate bylaws governing TMP process. And here we're referring specifically to Faculty Senate bylaws Article 9. And thanks to Ben's leadership on this front, this work is continuing methodically and very well. A second meeting that was held to update the senior administration on the committee work focused on two recommendations: the Institutional Racism Working Group, chaired by Beth McGowan, is also undertaking. For this working group, one of the things, recommendation they are working on is to work with the administration to recognize and dismantle the domains of the university that produce traditional oppressions, and especially in the context of the president goal calling for empowerment and shared responsibility to establish a five-year university-wide diversity, equity, and inclusion plan. This working group is also furthering another work regarding decolonizing the curricula by critically analyzing the underpinnings of current course offerings and including in our courses, BIPOC scholars and artists and the like. Plans are also underway to convene a third meeting with the university senior leadership. This has just been confirmed today and will take place by mid-February and will bring together the diversity, equity, and inclusion working group with the senior administration and leadership. And just a little over an hour ago, many of you might have seen in your email inbox, email that came from Provost Ingram. And that email, she not only expressed her commitment as the Executive Vice President and Provost to support the work of this committee, but it is also a call that she issued to NIU faculty and administration to support the work that this committee is doing along with many other groups, all in order to support the work of equity, diversity, and inclusion. Well, we think this is a very good signal and a good start that resulted from the effort that the three working groups whose work I just outlined here. So the Social Justice Committee next meeting is scheduled on February 9th, and it is open to any member in this body who wish to attend. And yeah, so that is what I have. And, you know, in the light of, you know, the development that is happening, I just want to take opportunity again and thank the committee members and especially the chairs in gendering that work for moving this work forward. So thank you. If there is any questions, I'm happy to take some. Yeah, go ahead.
Really, just more of a comment, Ismail. Is one of your groups looking at course evaluation of faculty and by students?
Course evaluation?
Yes. Are you looking at faculty evaluation? What was it that you said in your email? Was there like a... No? Did I read that incorrectly?
Not specifically that I, you know, kind of am aware of.
I thought there was something to do with like looking at how faculty are evaluated.
Right. If it is evaluation with respect to tenure and promotion,
okay, that's different.
Then
okay.
That is something okay. That, yes, one of the working group is core okay. To, yeah.
And included in that, then, will they be looking at course evaluations, like how faculty are evaluated by students in their courses? Because I just mentioned this, if you're interested in looking, the public caucus of the FAC, we just collected samples of course evaluations mm-hmm. That are used by different public universities in the state of Illinois, if you want to take a look at those.
Well, absolutely.
Because there's a lot of bias and
absolutely
involved
as
in
I
those
said,
evaluations. Okay.
The working groups, they are still in the process of, you know, working with stakeholders,
okay,
collecting additional data.
Yeah.
And also both within NIU and outside NIU, and we are looking at a lot of different kind of models. And some okay. of those models, I don't want to get too much into specifics,
yeah, right.
But when you get into specific, you begin to see how tenure and promotion are being evaluated.
Right.
So teaching is definitely one dimension of that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. I'll pass those forward to you then. Thank you. Okay.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ishmael. So we'll move on to Student Government Association, Dublin.
Good afternoon, everyone. We got off to the rough start with spring semester and classes going virtual, but it's good to see everyone back in a physical location again. So SGA has been working hard on two fronts, and I'm going to just kind of go on it as saying internal with here on campus and external outside of campus. So internally, a few things have been happening. One major concern that SGA has been noticing is that we have a trend of there has been a trend of falling student academic success among our student leaders. We really noticed that majority of student leaders on campus among across all of our student organizations saw a decrease in their overall GPAs between last semester and this semester. And it is a cause for concern as some of these people have fallen below the required amount to again go for these officer positions in student government. So a lot of these student organizations are essentially losing their leadership structure. So one of the things that we'll be working on over this semester is trying to provide more of an academic experience to our students and also try to plug these students with services and offices across campus so that we can try and better support our students, graduate, non-traditional, and undergraduate. We've been just been seeing it all across the board. Another thing is, over the course of fall semester, we've had a handful of graduates and non-traditional students come in and talk to the Student Government Association about the fact that they believe that there are inadequate benefits and resources available to the community, specifically citing that there is no known student support group or office for their needs. Now, while it's unknown to me whether or not there's an official graduate student association or graduate student office, we do want to make sure that this service is provided to students in the future moving forward. So over the course of this semester, we will be discussing with graduate students, non-traditional students, military students, all of these different populations to ensure that their needs are met over the course of this semester, as we are trying our hardest to avoid another slip in academic success amongst our students in the coming year. Externally, we are working on a few larger initiatives that will also help support some of our internal initiatives. So one of the things that we actually reported on last semester was we joined on to the Double the Pell Grant initiative with Dr. Freeman in our Federal Affairs Office. Now, over the course of winter break, though, we have actually, NIU SGA has assisted in growing a national coalition with the task of following up with the Double the Pell Grant and also following a few other initiatives. So this national coalition has grown to include the students of the state of California, the state of New York, the state of Washington, the associated students in the state of Minnesota, and also smaller student organizations within the Midwest region. So this is including Illinois, Indiana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and a few other states. So right now, NIU is actually leading the Illinois chapter of this coalition as we're trying to grow it towards the MAC conference, I-State, U of I, and other universities to join onto our Double the Pell Grant initiative. And we're also looking to support initiatives such as better student pay on campus, and other services to bring to campus, such as textbook exchange networks or other forms of communication that our students can really use and help reduce the cost of their education. Really, we've been in discussion all winter break. This is something that has been needed, not just at NIU, but grad students across the Midwest and across the southern states have been begging for more benefits, more services, just to help them out, whether it's because they're confused about what's happening on campus or because the university itself does not have those resources. We are really looking to expand not just what's going on here, but also help out at other institutions. One other thing that we are working on internally is that we know that last week we were all virtual with our classes, and we saw a huge influx of students complaining that online learning was not what they wanted to do. A lot of students were very adamant about not going to classes last week, and a lot of them really tried their hardest to stay at home, whether it was Chicago or some other place in Illinois, and try to avoid coming back to campus because a lot of them pretty much guessed that we were just going to stay virtual for most of the semester. So one of the things that SJ will be cracking down on this semester is actually we'll be helping the university reinforce the Protect the Pack plan. And we are looking forward to better enforcing these COVID protections in place. We don't want the campus to lock back up and go back to virtual learning. We're very aware that there are some instructors that do not want to partake in virtual learning. So we really want to avoid any further incidents or any further miscommunications this semester. That's the main initiatives of what we're working on.
Thank you very much. So operating staff council, Natasha.
Hey everybody. The OLC is working with HR. Pretty much everything that Bill said is exactly
you know, what we're working on. So we're working with HR to figure out what we can do to keep staff and figure out a way to adjust the pay for the positions that are significantly underpaid based on the benchmarking that they did with other Illinois institutions. We're looking to get supervisors training on how desk audits work and provide additional training to understand how additional pay forms work. Then we just had a meeting today, and now we just found out that over the last 2 years and 8 months, the APEX has been down on employees for a total of 29% of their workers are now gone, which are the office series. And then our hopes are that we can work successfully together with HR to come up with some strategic plans that will allow us to keep more of our employees and our co-workers and hopefully prevent our institution from losing expertise in specific areas around the campus. But in the meantime, figure out a way to get additional pay forms for the employees that are doing 2, 3, and 4 positions, since they're significantly down on employees. So that's pretty much what we're working on. Everybody that's contacting the president, which is Holly Nicholson, and anybody that's on the OSC, everybody's concerned with the amount of work that they're doing, that they're working, you know, significantly past hours. And if your salary, it is what it is. So we're just looking for ways that we won't lose more employees and figuring out a way and finding funding to be able to pay them. Thank you.
Thank you, Natasha. And for the support professional staff, we don't have a report for today. So last thing, if you slide down the calendar, I'm just going to highlight the dates. So our next meeting will be February 23rd, March 30th, and April 27th for the Faculty Senate meetings, and they'll be held here in this room for the rest of the semester. So please note your calendars. So with that, I will take a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting today. So move David. Second, Ben. All right, all those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, say no. Any abstentions? All right, Faculty Senate meeting for today is adjourned.